In the Acts of the Apostles, a kind of a history of the Christian movement beginning after the death of Jesus and carrying on, in other words, from where the Gospels leave off with their story. In the second chapter, the 42nd verse, we read, "They remained faithful to the teachings of the apostles, to the brotherhood, to the breaking of the bread, and to prayers." Now that formulation is rather interesting because the way it's put together, it implies that there were communities in existence who were expected or who themselves expected to behave in certain ways. Praying, meeting, the breaking of the bread. There's a sense of a certain acceptable standard of behavior. The apostles, who were the original disciples of Jesus, accompanied him during his ministry on the earth. We meet them with him again and again and again in the gospel stories. And after Jesus' death, they consciously and as a body, they are depicted as being together, decided to obey Jesus' last command to them, go forth and teach all nations. Now, this again is a little bit like the point that I made about choosing a replacement for Judas Iscariot, a sense of a kind of a corporate group with corporate responsibilities. Now, Paul, an early Jewish convert to Christianity, and the new faith's greatest missionary, perhaps indeed one of the greatest of all, the second greatest teacher in the history of Christianity, founded new communities. He went around the world founding communities, not converting individuals, but converting groups of people, or converting individuals who were then formed into groups of people. He instituted leaders for those communities, and he corresponded with the leaders of those communities. The leaders of those communities corresponded with him. There was clearly some sense of a network of leaders, and thus implicitly of some kind of connection among these communities. At the very least, they received visitors from one another. They prayed for each other. So again, there is a sense of some kind of a vaguely corporate entity, an entity larger than the individual or even than the individual community. How exactly are we to understand what those communities were? Paul uses the word church regularly of a community in a particular place, the church in Corinth, for instance. Now, let's bear in mind something that I had mentioned in the last lecture. Paul's epistles fall between 49 and 62. In other words, they are earlier than the Gospels. So we're left with a paradox that Paul, in the 50s, is using the word church routinely, but the Gospel writers between the 60s and the 80s, possibly early 90s, are not using the word church. What are we to make of that? Well, in truth, not much. It's just a puzzle that we cannot really explain. Now, from some of Paul's letters, we begin to get hints about the organization of individual Christian communities. As I've mentioned just a moment ago, from his letters, we also have a sense that these communities maintain certain kinds of relationships, even if we can't specify exactly what those relationships were, but they maintained relationships with one another. But his letters don't provide us much detail about the nature of that networking, as we might say. What his letters do show us, with some clarity, is what the individual communities looked like. We read in various places in Paul's letters of three kinds of officials. We'll just use the word officials as a kind of a very neutral term. One group are called overseers. One group are called elders. One group are called servants. Now, those words have passed most commonly into the English language, though they are retained by some Christian groups. They have passed more commonly into the English language as bishop, priest, and deacon. Now, you might be wondering, how in the world did that happen? I won't go through too much detail here, but bishop in Greek is episkopos, which means literally, you can hear scope in there, episkopos, to look down upon, to look over. Here is your overseer, you see. Elder, presbyteros. Now, that word means quite literally elder in Greek. It can also mean ambassador. It can also be a wise man, someone to whom one turns for advice. The third, diakonos, that gives us deacon in English. But a diakonos in Greek, one who diakonein, one who serves, you see, is the third of these officials. Now what happens is that presbyteros passes by and by through Latin into Norman French, into English, and becomes priest.